Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Well, welcome to Seedlings, January 21st, 2010. Got a different type of show tonight. It's hopefully going to be a call-in show, but that really depends on the callers. We've got two snagged already, so we've got two guests in the wings, but I'll introduce myself and then send it on up the coast. This is Bob Sprankle in South Berwick, Maine, and I'll send it right on up to Kenny Bunkport. I remember to say port this time, Alice.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Hi, this is Alice Barr, and I will send it down to Miss Cheryl.
Okay, this is Cheryl Oaks in Wells, and I'm going to bounce back up to Portland, Maine for Karen.
Hi, this is Karen, and I'm going to send it. Where is it going next?
Somewhere out in Georgia.
In Georgia?
Yes.
Ah. And I'm Bill Rakosnik. I'm near Athens, Georgia.
Yay. Welcome, everybody. And then we have our great chat room, too, from all over.
And hopefully they will be joining in audibly, too, as well. Is that right? Audibly? Audio? Audio
yes.
Join? Okay. So, Bill and Karen, can you guys say what you teach and a little bit about yourselves?
Start with Karen, if we could, because she's going out to celebrate with her son and her family for his birthday.
Excellent.
Woohoo!
Yep. Well, I am a first grade teacher in Cape Elizabeth, and I've been working there my entire short teaching career of about 12 years. I think this is my 12th year of teaching.
Nice. So first grade, you have kindergarten students that those parents and students have had a chance at parent conferences before, right?
So yes, we have half day K right now, and they do go through the and have the parent-teacher conferences, and then they come to full day first grade. We have two conferences a year that we do, one in the fall and one in the spring.
Nice.
And Bill, before you go, I don't think we've actually said that's the topic of our show, that it's going to be about parent conferences. And Bill, you really kicked off that conversation for us. Can you talk a little bit about that? You and I have had some great emails, and you got this going. Thank you for that.
Oh, no, not a problem. Well, it just started off innocently enough. You and I had responded by email once before, and I just asked you for a little bit of advice about parent-teacher conferences. I've been teaching for about 10 years now, and I've always kind of had just a little bit of paranoia in the back of my head because early on I had a few, you know, parent-teacher conferences that seemed to be going okay, and just out of nowhere just took a turn south. And so I just asked you, you know, if you had any advice, if you knew of any good research on suggestions for that. And like you said, since then, that's just sort of started up a dialogue between you and I, and I guess up there in Maine as well.
Right. It's a great one because it's almost like that, you know, the big elephant that's in the room that nobody really talks about.
I was just going to say that. That's great. And Bill, you said in one of your emails, you know, just to make you aware, I am a veteran teacher. You know, this isn't new, and I really appreciated your honesty and kind of talking about this because I've talked to a lot of people since our email, and you know, everybody that I've talked to has had some experience where things haven't gone as well as they could, and you know, I've also started hearing some great strategies. Karen, what some strategies you use for conferences and in particular, how to have positive experiences?
Well, probably the first thing I can think of is to be prepared for it, especially in first grade, having everything gathered in advance and ready to go. Usually what I do is I just have the kids at the end of the day, put all the materials on the desk so I need them. I can grab them quickly. And then I think when I start my conferences, I usually come out right up front by saying, do you have any questions you want to make sure I cover during the conference? Because sometimes on the way there, you know, they'll talk and they'll want to talk about something in particular, and I may not cover it during the conference. And I think by saying that up front, I think it helps them realize that this is a conference for both of us, for all of us, and it seems to help. And I just sort of make sure that at the end of the conference, I just make sure I go back and revisit that to make sure I've answered their questions, if they have any. And they usually do. They usually have a couple. So that's one of the things that I do. Always, of course, bringing up the positives right at the beginning and always ending with a positive about their child. They really appreciate that. And just not, I think, surprising them with any kind of information they weren't expecting to hear. I think we all dread making those phone calls home, but I think, you know, doing that up front really helps when you meet the conference time. It's a great time to just sort of discuss the progress that may have been made, you know, if there was anything that I had to communicate with them.
And how long, and I'm going to ask the chat room this too, if you could type this in, how long are your conference sessions? Ours are usually 15, 20 minutes at my school. What's everybody got for time out there?
Well, that was actually sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that was actually one of the problems I mentioned to Bob in one of my emails is that I wish my school we were more efficient. It seems like one of the toes we're not willing to step on is we're almost afraid that we might be seen as ending the meeting too early or not giving the parents enough of a chance. And, you know, I want our groups to get more efficient at running those meetings and ending them because some of them just seem to last almost forever.
And how about you, Karen?
We schedule ours, we say 20 minutes, in first grade in particular, it's first and second, I think. We say 20 minutes. I usually allow an extra 10, so I schedule my conferences every 30 minutes. That way it allows for a little bit of, you know, run over if I need to, and a way to finish up the. And, you know, it even gives you extra time if you really need to talk about something with the parents that comes up. So I usually schedule them about 20 minutes. And I usually take 30.
Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of 10 minutes in the chat room, some 8 minutes. And I think that is one of the inherent problems is that, you know, especially if you have a large class, you know, I mean, Some schools have 30 students. You know, that's a lot of time, you know, to be there for one night, two nights with parents. So maybe that's part of the problem is it's such a short time. And, you know, how can we get it more prepared beforehand? Does anybody have any suggestions for that so that that time is used effectively? Bill, it sounds like that's something you're looking at.
Yes. I mean, I'd like to know the answer to that. Some of the best meetings I've seen run were ones where the person running the meeting had certain specific goals, IEP meetings, for instance, in which we are here today to determine, you know, whether or not the student should be inclusion for this or something like that. But some of the other ones where the meeting was initiated perhaps by the parent, or there doesn't seem to be a set purpose. Those seem to be some of the ones that can just run on forever.
I think that's great, you know, to talk about the purpose, Bill, because just saying that it's a student-parent conference really leaves that wide open. I'll ask the question first of Karen and then of Bill. But Karen, has there ever been a time when you ask the parent, is there something that you want to make sure you discuss before they leave? Has there ever been a surprise, like a parent was totally going down the wrong path that, or a different path than you would have gone?
No, most of the time, I think with me, it has been mostly about social, you know, how is my child getting along, and it's more a concern as a parent how their child is doing with friendships. I have had some concerns about academics, but usually the materials that I produce, you know, we're able to go over that. So most of the time the parents are really concerned about their child's social part of school.
And Bill, any surprise that you had, you know, when a parent walked in and said they wanted to discuss something and that wasn't really on your list of things that you thought was, you know, a high point?
Most of our parent-teacher meetings, I'm a sixth grade teacher, so a lot of them tend to be about grades. Every now and then, something will come a little bit out of left field. Sometimes there's a behavioral incident that perhaps I wasn't aware of. Sometimes it's something that is perhaps happening outside of school, but maybe those two individuals interact inside the school. But for the most part, I haven't been surprised too much. Sometimes I'm surprised by parent reactions to certain things. You know, sometimes I'll think, things are going pretty well. But every now and then, you know, sometimes a parent might react a little too more upset than I would think they would be to some a situation with a grade on something or something of that sort.
Karen, I have a question for you, and I know that your guys are probably waiting for dinner, but to go out to dinner. Have you seen any change or difference in your parent conferences or just in your parent conference time now that you've got a website that gives people a glimpse of what's happening in the classroom?
No, I haven't noticed any difference in them. To be honest, I don't know that my parents access the website as much as I'd like them to.
Mm-hmm.
I do frequently put in, you know, my newsletters, check out the website. I've got some new information there. And we are doing our report cards, too, online. So I'm trying to go green this year and not do newsletters at all on paper. It's all on my website now. So I'm hoping that encourages them to go to the website more. I have had some feedback from parents about the website, especially when I put things up there about what the children have been learning in the classroom, examples of our work from the day, things like that they seem to really respond to. Not so much the conferences as yet, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else have a question for Karen or Bill have a question for a 12-year veteran and from a 10-year veteran?
Well, I found it interesting to hear the perspective of a first grade teacher when it's more about social than grades.
Yeah.
It's funny because they, you know, love to hear about their children, especially, you know, the younger ones. And one of the things they always say is, "Are you sure you're talking about my child?"
I've heard a lot of teachers give me that feedback as I've been asking this week. The parents can't believe it, and they think that, you know, the teacher is like snowing them, you know. You know, that evidence really helps. You know, nope, this is this is them.
Well, Karen, go ahead.
I just have a question, and it's probably, I don't know if it can be answered, perhaps someone in the chat room or down the road, maybe somebody will hear this. Where we do half-day kindergarten, one of the things that I'm curious about is if anyone out there, we have three teachers teaching six classes, and that is just such a load when it comes to parent-teacher conferences. Are there any perhaps advice out there or ways that people do their conferences if they're kindergarten teachers or they, or perhaps their school has a way of doing it that makes it a little bit easier, because I think most teachers in my school do 15-minute conferences to 20-minute conferences. So perhaps somebody out there can let us know if they have any ideas on that.
When I first started at my current school, one of the things that we did is the science teachers and the social studies teachers both taught that those subjects for half the year and switched. That wasn't my first year. And so because of that, we ended up eventually having a lot of the students, and so we got pulled into a lot of the conferences. Later on, we went to an every other day schedule for 1 year, and when that happened, we just got pulled into just about every conference, and that was a big problem then too.
Wow.
Yeah, and Karen, I think especially at that young, kindergarten age, parents really, want to know the social aspects of school, the behaviors of their kids, the rules of the school, and then the academics, how to fit that in, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how are they adjusting to, school, period. So,
right.
Those are questions they ask in first grade, too, because their children are going from a half day to a full day.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, how they're doing emotionally and socially and things like that. They're still interested, very interested in the academics, but
right.
Social activism.
Yep. Well, Karen, I don't want to keep you, but thank you so much for coming on and giving us a first grade perspective, and appreciate it.
Well, thank you all very, very much.
Thank you so much, and have a happy birthday meal.
Yes. Say happy birthday to Cliff.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'd like to take this this break to just kind of clue people listening in on a couple things. First off, we have this discussion that has started over at the Ning, and Bill was kind enough to let us reprint his email there, so the whole conversation starter's there, and people are really adding great feedback. So I'll drag that into the chat room. That hopefully will be an ongoing conversation. Also, I set up a delicious link. We always have our Geek of the Week delicious links. And this week I set one up that is for resources for conferences. So I'm going to drag that link in as well. But if you want to add to that, you would use the hashtag at the end of this address, and I'll say it in a second. The hashtag is 2010-01-21 Seedlings Conference Resources, and I'll just drag that by itself into the chat room too. And then everything will just add into there. I know that's kind of a long hashtag, but I couldn't think of anything else. So so if people could add to that, because, I think this is a, really layered topic, even just what we heard already, with different times and what people want to hear. I definitely, being at the elementary level, see that a lot too, that parents really want to know what's happening socially, and they also want to know, what's my kid doing during the day? Mm-hmm. And there's sort of like this back and there's not a great balance that I found yet, but I've tried to really provide that transparency through a website, like you were asking, Cheryl, and, sending home so much so that, some of that is already taken care of. But that doesn't always work, does it? People still come in and they're not sure of what, what the unit is or what they're studying. One thing that's helped me is splitting the conference into time with the parent and the student and a portfolio out in the hallway and mm-hmm. talking and showing all these artifacts that we've got out there, then coming in and having time with me. And in the chat room, we just, people are mentioning student-led conferences, and I'd love to hear more thoughts on that. That's what I did. I've always had student-led conferences. To me, this is a time for the student to really get to talk about his or her work. And then there are times when parents want to have their say. And if that is going to dominate, then I always try to set up a separate meeting then. And sometimes that's without the student. What are people's use of student-led conferences or what they think about that?
Well, I think there's been some conversation back and forth here about, you know, the portfolio share and student-led conferences, especially, you know, people are, I think it was Maureen who said, you know, have it at the middle school. That's where what's being said isn't a secret. Middle school kids need, should be in on the conference. Carol Teachforce said that, sorry, Carol and Maureen. And I think historically we've had portfolio shares in our district anyways at the elementary level. Bill or Alice, do you have portfolio at middle and high school?
Yes, we have a portfolio share towards the end of the year in middle school. And certainly that works. I'm interested in the student-led conference that happens in the middle of the year, or because, you know, they're struggling in one particular area. I'm wondering how that's structured. Is there some kind of agenda the student works off of, or how have those kind of conferences worked?
When I've done it at the elementary level, and I interned with a multi K-1-2 class, and I've, you know, my very first year going in, I was with Charlene Cohn, an excellent mentor, and I was blown away because I really didn't know at that point. I was blown away watching kindergartners first trimester lead the entire conference, and it can be done, and they are prepared because they've done writing beforehand. And so that's the model that I have always followed, is having a reflection sheet for the students to get everything ready and talk about their strengths, things they're proud of in each subject area, and then things that their goals are that they want to work on. A lot of times it's flipping through that as sort of a guide. In my third and fourth grade classes, they would get to the point where they weren't reading their notes. They were just using it as a fallback in case they got stuck or something. What about you, Alice?
We do, well, the ones I have the most experience with are grade 9, and their student-led conference is actually a culmination of their portfolio. So from December to April, they're pulling their artifacts and things. It has to be digital. And then they have an agenda, which I should try to find a copy of that. They have a protocol that they follow, and they facilitate the meeting with their parents. We do 4 at once in the same room, mm-hmm. and we have our school. In our school, every teacher is an advisor. So the advisor is there to sort of manage the whole thing, but the kids do the facilitation. It's pretty cool, yeah. Actually. I love it. I love it because, you know, you really see the kids in a different light. The parents are kind of, you know, it's pretty neat for them to see the kids talking about the process of their learning.
Yeah, I love conferences as well. And, you know, there's times where I'm sitting there with tears in my eyes watching a student talk about his or her work, and I'm just so amazed, you know? It's just incredible. And I always tell them, when I was in fourth grade, there's no way I could have done this, you know?
Right.
You know, I mean, talk about lifelong learning and, you know, being in charge of your own learning. It's really powerful.
And we also, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is that we practice with the kids. And that's part of a piece, I think, in any classroom. It's really important for the kids culturally in a class to be involved with, you know, part of reading and reflecting and sharing out work all along. If that's a normal sort of part of the process, then a student-led conference isn't a huge deal when they go to do it. It's just a different audience.
Right.
And I think that's really important. I think some student-led conferences don't work well because the kids are just kind of thrown into it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, I like the idea of them preparing something ahead of time to get them to sort of force them to think about, oh, I'm not just going to go in there and say whatever. I have to prepare about this, think about it ahead of time.
Right, right. I mean, we wouldn't do that in business or anything. So, again, it's, you know, the idea behind it is that this is a real-life skill anyway, you know.
Yeah, I used to have them practice with each other. They would only practice the strength parts. They didn't have to talk about their goals with students. And then we would run some scenarios, you know, because there's times when people get nervous, you know, and so we would kind of run those kind of scenarios. And, you know, I would tell them what I would do if I needed to help them or if suddenly they were exhibiting behavior that wasn't typical of what I knew of them, i.e. getting silly at a conference, you know, that I probably would stop it and have us take a breath and things like that. That really, really helped them get into it. Of course, these were kids that were doing it since kindergarten, so they were like pros, you know. This was, they know how to do it, you know.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, would anyone in the chat room like to come into the audio? And if we could facilitate that. I think, was Peggy going to come in, Cheryl?
No, Peggy said there's big storms out there.
Okay, so she's hunkering down. Can I read some highlights from the discussion that's happening at the NANG that stuck out to me? That I, you know, some of these really, really hit me. Looney Hiker, who is that again?
Pat Hensley.
Okay.
South Carolina.
She was our first poster. And one thing that Pat talked about right at the beginning is she calls her students' parents every 2 weeks and shares successes as well as problems. Wow. I mean, the conference, you know, how could there be any surprises at the conference at that point, you know? I was saying this right before we came on, but I was always a bit nervous to call parents because, I don't know, maybe it's my history. You know, a phone call from the teacher always meant bad, you know, and I didn't want the alarms to go off even when I was calling for positives. But that's something that I wish that I really did more.
On the positive side, I've actually turned around relationships with some of my students where – there, you know, maybe I've had a rough history with them for quite some time, and then I'll start looking. Is there something I can call home about that's positive? Is there something I can call home about that's positive? And when I find that, I try and make sure, okay, I've got a call today, you know, say, you know, such and such did, you know, this. And I remember one time in particular, called home, said, you know, this student did something positive, and then that student came in the next day and said, wow, Mr. Rakosnik, you called home and told about, you know, how well things went in class, and they took me out to McDonald's. And whole rest of the year, a complete 180, my relationship with that student. So yes, sometimes, you know, if you can call home and have something positive to say, that can turn around a whole relationship with a student.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. What was your question, Bob?
I was talking about what Pat had written with the calling home every 2 weeks. Mm. I think that's where I was at.
When I first started teaching, I had a small resource room full of students at the kindergarten level, and I did home visits, which was really interesting because for one of the parent conferences, they would come in, and for one of the parent-teacher conferences, I would go to their home. And that got a lot of mileage. I didn't have, you know, a lot of students, so I could do that. But, you know, that was really interesting.
And can I just speak to a little piece that's really made a difference for us is that we have really encouraged email communication as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's not as personal as a phone call, I think the fact that teachers can email quickly means that some things both positive and needs improvement, get taken care of, or at least a parent is made aware very quickly. And so we do a lot of work around new parents coming into the district that we function a great deal through our email system. Go ahead. No, that's go ahead.
It's fine. I was going to bring that up if we didn't get to that eventually. In addition to being quick, it also can deal with when you have many, many students. You can send out that one email, test coming up at the end of the week, or, you know, report cards are going home, and so you can reach 90 parents at once or 60 right. parents at once. And I've had some parents where maybe I only see them face-to-face at an open house or something like that, but one of the things they come in, one of the first things they say is, oh, I really appreciate, you know, you sending out all those emails, because my son or daughter comes home and all they ever say is, oh, we don't have any homework. Well, now we know better. And I think we've kind of reached the stage where email is kind of a not high tech anymore. It's kind of medium tech. As long as the parent has, as long as they have some kind of computer access at home, or even phones now, they can get an email.
Well, maybe it's really texting that we have to be looking at, you know, because. Yeah, you know, not everybody's going to the web pages, and some people are talking about that in the chat room. And, you know, even email, I know, doesn't always get read if it's, you know, there's so much email. But a quick text might be the way to go. I don't know.
Have any of you started to use Google Voice? I was. Yes, no?
Sorry. I have it, but I haven't really set it up.
I've started to look into that as a way to help make it easier for me to communicate with parents. I've even suggested it to other teachers as a way to, if you're nervous about parents getting your home phone number or something, you could set up a Google Voice account and make the calls through that. And then you're, you know, making calls from your cell phone or at home, and you're not really giving out your home phone number. There are also functions in there to text. I don't know about the mass texting that we were talking about a few moments ago with, you know, upcoming tests or something, but I think that presents some interesting options, and I'm sure we're going to start to see more developments, not just with Google, but other, you know, quasi services.
Right. I mean, it's really all about communication, keeping those lines open, and the more communication that comes from the teacher, the easier parent conference are. At least that seems to be what I hear a lot about. And part of that communication piece is, you know, how easy is it for parents to access grades or standards or whatever it is?
Right.
You know, how easy is it for teachers to be able to email or have voicemail, whatever it is? But the more that we purport and support that, I feel like teachers are pretty happy at parent conference time. There are no surprises, I guess.
Yeah. Right. And there was quite a thread way back in the chat where people were talking about online grades and portals for parents and students. And that's made a tremendous difference in our middle school and high school, where parents don't wait for that midterm report. They have access weekly. And Carol Teach 4 said that, you know, their school put the parameters out and said that grades will not be updated every day, but they'll be updated every week. So that might take some of the pressure off, you know, parents calling teachers and saying, well, what did they get on that report? Or what did they get on that test? But I really think that has made, it's real, that's opened the window for sharing information.
Well, and that parent portal also, our students also have access, of course, to their grades. But again, it makes the students much more proactive on what they're missing or what assignments they need to turn in. And they know their parents can check it as well. But honestly, if you look at the stats on those things, it's the kids who are checking all the time to make sure that they've got everything turned in. And that's made a huge difference.
Right, right. Well, that's good.
We talked a little bit about the preparation before. When I had my kids prepare, I also would send home a sheet for parents to prepare. And even with a tear off, if there's anything that you want to talk about, you know, send this back in to make sure that we have it. And then again, I'd ask that at the conference time. And some of those came back, and I'd have a conference with the parents before the student-led conference so that we could still let the student have that forum to reflect on his or her work and show off the positives and talk about goals. And we could talk about some of the other issues beforehand. And that really helped. Some parents would do it. Some parents wouldn't. But, you know, it's good to at least get it out there and have them thinking, because I think a lot of what, to me, makes a successful conference, and I learned this from Ann Davies, who I put one of her sites in that resource. Ann Davies, I don't know if people have read her. She's really great. And, you know, the conference is really every member's responsibility, not just the teachers. You know, it's a student and it's the parent and it's the teacher. We're all invested in this. And so really, you know, if any part is holding out, you know, on how things are going, then there will be a surprise and it's not going to go well. So, you know, I think that's part of it too, getting the parents more involved in preparing, and what do they want to say that they're proud of their student and what goals they have for their students at that time too.
Here's a question for us, Sheila. I don't know what to say. She says, I have a few parents not online. Any clever ways to keep them in the loop and not feeling excluded?
Cell phone.
Right, texting to the cell phone?
Yep. They can often subscribe. I don't know.
Mm.
We have a list in Power. We use PowerSchool, and we have a list of people who get everything via other means, kind of thing. So like a mail list. So like when it's report card time, we don't print report cards. But right. If they're parents without access, they get a printed card.
We lost you there a little bit, Alice.
That helps.
Oh, we're still losing her.
Yep.
Gremlins.
Yes. Alice, we missed that part of the conversation.
She's in the
she's
clouds.
She's frozen.
Bill, are you still there?
Oh, Alice is lost.
Bill? Can people in the chat room hear Sherilyn and Bob? Oh, boy.
Huh.
Well, while we're figuring that out, yeah, we lost Alice, she's coming back in. I don't see any meters from Bill. Let's talk about, you know, what to do when it's really, because, you know, a lot of people have mentioned, yeah, I've had conferences that things have happened that I just didn't anticipate. And what do we do there? You know, some people said in the chat, in the discussion, I'm trying to look at who said that. You know, stopping the conference and setting up, you know, an alternate time with an administrator or social worker or whomever is going to help. And I have done that at times, not like, let's stop the conference. I've said, you know, let's finish this, what we're doing now, and then set up that other time.
Right.
What are in the chat room, what are some strategies for when things really seem to be getting out of hand or not going well?
Hello?
Hi, there's Bill.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Okay, I could hear you the whole time, but apparently you couldn't hear me.
No.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. And is
ask
Alice back
in? Ask your question again. No, she's not.
Sure,
she's,
I'll ask
she's
it
offline.
Again. Just, you know, when things are really going not productively and Kristen's, was it, no, who is this in the chat room? I like this. Mike Gorman said in the discussion, you know, what's the purpose of the parent conference? Ultimate success of the child. So if things are going negative and if things are getting tense in any way, that's not serving the child for sure. So what are some strategies of, you know, redirecting it or helping it when it is going into a negative place? Negative might be too strong a word, but Cheryl, any ideas on that?
No, I'm scrambling to get scrambling. Alice.
Okay. Let's see what the chat room says. I don't think they've heard me yet.
Hi.
Oh, there you are, Alice. Okay.
That was weird.
Yeah. Yeah, and we lost Bill for a little bit, but he didn't drop off. So I think, Bill, you're still here, right?
I think I am, yes. Okay.
It's almost doggy time, but just get ready.
All right.
I saw the car come in, so they'll be wild in a moment.
Bill, that means her dogs will. They get out their banjo and guitar. They really hoot it up.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's quite a show.
So, well, Alice, we were just asking, okay, what about those times when things are really not going well? And I was saying that Mike Gorman in the discussion said, you know, the purpose of parent conference is the ultimate success of the child. And if things are getting tense in any way, well, that's not serving the child. So what are some strategies? And, you know, I mentioned like setting up an alternate time and possibly having an administrator there or something. But what are some strategies that you or teachers at your school have used?
Well, I hardly ever do conferences anymore, which is anyway. I put in the Ning a couple of tips that we get at parent conference time, and maybe you've already talked about this a little bit, but keeping the focus on the student, let's focus on this, let's focus on how this year is going for now. And I think that piece of providing opportunities for other conference times, like if it starts to get a little out of control, you have to sort of step back and go, okay, this, you can't take it personally, even though it is personal, but you just have to kind of hopefully let it bounce off of you, wash over you, and just reschedule, because nothing will be accomplished if it's angry or it's not productive, I think, that way.
There's a certain amount of stress involved. If, you know, I'm thinking back, because when you do have, you know, scheduled conferences, like let's say you're at the 20-minute time, if you start running over, then you've got people waiting out in the hallway that, you know, need to get home and feed their children. And, it can really back up. So there are times when, you know, it's just not conducive when you have that many people involved. I always had a paper out on the table out in the hallway and told people, you know, if you want more time, go sign your name up on the way out, you know, so that they could even, you know, if they were walking out the door and saying, I don't feel settled, you know, they could, you know, write their name and then we'd reschedule again.
Yeah, that's pretty much the consensus in the chat room, too, that, you know, be an active listener. Don't take it personally, and don't be defensive. Sheila had a good point that, you know, once, if parents are able to just verbalize what they're feeling and they get that out of, you know, get that out so that it's been heard, then they're able to move on beyond that. So thanks, Sheila.
One tip
Girls,
I want.
Daddy's home.
And here they are. Cujo.
One tip I wanted to share was not to shoot yourself in the foot. I can't tell you how many teachers I've seen talking about a particular assignment, project, test, whatever, and said, oh yeah, the whole class seemed to struggle on this one, and look, your son or daughter did too. And I just cringe every time I hear that, because I'm just waiting for the parent to turn around one day and say, well, that must be a lousy assignment, or you must be a lousy assignment. I haven't quite seen a parent react that way yet, but every time I hear, especially if it's a newer teacher, say something like that after the conference is over, I kind of say, you know, be on the lookout for that kind of thing. And I wouldn't quite put it that way. And, you know, don't maybe not compare, you know, one student to another student as well.
I have to tell you a funny story. My very first parent conference ever, I taught kindergarten. This is many, many years ago. But the parent walked in, and I had 10 boys and 4 girls in my class. And he looked at me, and he said, "Now, what do you think of Bruno Bettelheim's dream theory?" And I went, "What?"
It's quite an initiation.
Yes.
I know. It was the scariest parent conference I'd ever had. It turns out he was teaching at the university. I don't know what he was trying to do, but
yeah.
Anyway, that was pretty crazy.
Well, this may be related to why he would, I mean, he obviously puts you at a disadvantage for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that Bill and I were talking about in an email is we all have our own childhood experiences of school. And you know, sometimes we have parents coming in that may not have had a positive experience. And that could be part of, you know, the conference. And, you know, how do you change that? I think that it's different every time, but that's something that, you know, does have an effect. I mean, it has to, you know, just why did he do that? It, to me, it sounds like he was psyching you out. You know? I don't know why.
I don't either, but.
Well, this go ahead, Bill.
I wanted to go back very briefly to some of the, technological solutions we were talking about. Unfortunately, even in this country, we have students who they're coming to school, and that breakfast and lunch that they're getting in school might be the only good meals that they're getting the whole day. In districts that are more economically depressed, you know, the technological solutions are not going to be they're not going to work as well or with a very high percentage of the students. There are school districts that have a really difficult time just keeping up with correct contact information. You know, maybe, you know, mom or dad don't have a phone number, or, you know, maybe the phone number you have is grandma's phone number who lives, you know, down the street or even the next county over. So, you know, we talked a lot about one way to make the conferences better is lots of contact. You know, as you know, keeping up with that contact information sometimes can really be, you know, a big hurdle in that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's even the issue of some parents do not come to conferences.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we've all had that.
I've heard of some parents who don't have the correct contact information on purpose because they don't want to get contacted. And then I've seen things where there was a bus crash or something, and then they can't get a hold of the parents.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. And I mean, I don't think there's any definitive answer to any of these questions. You know, I think it's an ongoing process and evolving. I mean, perhaps conferences are going to look completely different, you know, with our students, with students' children when, you know, 10, 20 years from now. I mean, it might be a different kind of thing. But I am looking at the clock, and the dogs did alert us earlier. And I'm wondering if we should slide into Geek of the Week, and if people would like to continue this conversation at Seedlings. I just think it's such a great topic that really doesn't have an end.
Right.
Yeah.
And Bill, I can't thank you enough for starting it, and I really enjoyed our correspondence with it. I mean, Bill wrote me that first email, and you know, I read it like, I don't know, 4:30 in the morning, Bill, or something, or 6 or so, and, you know, sent off something. And then it, you know, I thought about it like all day and all the next day. And I'm like, you know, I got more to say about this. And it just continued. So
Well, as I told you, one of the reasons I wrote to you initially is it's you know, one of the areas that I really feel that I have the most room to grow in, and if I could get better at this, you know, I could become an even better teacher.
That's great. That's what it's all about. Bill, you brought some Geek of the Weeks, didn't you?
Yeah, well, do you have the links I emailed you earlier?
Oh golly, I'm sure I do. I will try to find those real
quick. All right, while you're finding those, let me do my Tim Hart little plug here.
Yes.
While you're finding those. Yes. So those of you who know Tim Hart from the University of Maine, he asked me to just put a little plug in. They're doing Maine Gamers for Charity. They're streaming 24 hours of gaming at meg4c.org. And they're raising funds for the Haiti Earthquake Fund. And there's some hashtags there that you can use.
Nice.
If you're interested in following that.
Wow. So these are online games happening?
Apparently. I haven't checked it out yet. But I think he's been going just for about 2 hours. So they got a long way to go.
Oh, they're doing it nonstop? It's going to be...
Yeah, 24, apparently 24 hours.
Right. So. Right now.
Wow. Yeah. That's great. All right, Bill, I got your links ready, whichever ones you want me to drag in.
All right, well, if I can start, I'll be a little self-promoting. I'm a sixth grade social studies teacher, and I'm always, you know, developing a lot of my own content, and I love Google Earth. And so one of the things I've done is I've taken Google Earth and I've taken an open source software program called Cam Studio, and I've used that to make screencasts of Google Earth just starting from I make them two different kinds. I make one where, because we're in Georgia, of Google Earth starting in with the state of Georgia and then zooming over to a particular country, and then I make the other ones that I call it regional, where they'll start out from, you know, a wide angle and then zoom into a particular country. And basically what I'm doing is I'm doing the same thing you see on ABC News and CNN and some of that. And I've put them up on my portion of the Putnam County School website, and anyone can go and download them. If you're not in the state of Georgia, maybe you're not too happy about the Georgia ones, but there's the regional ones there too. And I've done it for a whole bunch of countries. I plan on doing it for more. I've got a lot of it organized by the Georgia Performance Standards. So if you're a teacher in Georgia and you happen to be listening to this, they're all organized there by 6th and 7th grade standards for the countries. And I'm working to work on the physical locations soon. I'm having a little bit of trouble with that because, you know, I want to be able, for instance, use the textures in Google Earth. But by the time, for instance, in the Ural Mountains, you zoomed on far enough so you can tell it's a mountain, you only see one mountain. You don't see the whole mountain range. So I got to see if I can figure something out with that. Wow. In addition to being self-promoting, another one that I've made is, do you all have Discovery Education up there in Maine?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good. Good. Well, we do in Georgia, and I just love it. And when I first started as a teacher, I used the whole videos all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would always look for a video on Mexico, a video on Canada, or something like that. And I'd show these 20-minute videos, and then I took InTech, and we had to make a video guide for one. And I did that, but it was an awful lot of work. And the real turning point for me was when I started using just the individual segments, because the video would be 2.5 minutes long, 3.5 minutes long, maybe 5 at most. And that's much more in keeping with the attention span of, in my case, a middle school student. If you've got a 2.5-minute video, everyone should be able to pay attention for 2.5 minutes. 20 minutes? Well, age plus one. No, I don't have 20-year-olds in my class. So that helped me out a lot. And my second link, and again, I have... I gave Bob the link to this on the school's website, is that I've made a whole bunch of PowerPoints that have the video embedded with, I don't distribute the videos, but you can get those through Discovery Education, with just a bunch of questions, you know, 2.5-minute video, here are the questions to watch beforehand, and then afterwards you've got the question, and then the next click reveals the answer. So I made a bunch of those, and I just figured I should share them with anyone who happens to stumble upon my little piece of the internet.
Wonderful.
Very nice.
That's great. So those are both in the chat rooms now, Bill.
Okay, great.
There, yeah.
Very great. Cool.
Who would like to go next?
I'll go next. I am very excited. It's the time of year when the Horizon Report comes out again. And so I'm giving people some homework in the chat room or listening in the podcast. Click on the link and get the 2010 Horizon Report, and Seedlings will be dissecting that and reflecting on it in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, probably mid-February with the shows that we have. But we this is like Christmas to us.
Yes.
We love it when it comes out. So, yeah, we definitely will. That's great. Alice?
All right. Mine is, called App Maker. Oh, dear, I'm having a little trouble getting it here. App Maker for the iPhone. And I had a student test it for me today. It allows you to bring, it's a create your own app thing for your phone. And it allows you to set up your own RSS feeds and customize them. And then you can upload the whole thing to the iTunes store and people can download it for free. It's pretty cool.
It
took him about 10 minutes to figure it out.
Now, does that cost money to make? Because I saw another link I thought you sent today, and that was like...
The Daniel Pink one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one I think costs.
Okay, so this is free, and you can basically turn your website into an iPhone. Wow, very nice.
So what he did was he took a bunch of feeds from our school sites and our Twitter account and put them all into one app. So it's kind of like Altop or something like that.
Wow.
So you take them all and they all go into one single app. And then when you get the app, you can disaggregate all the feeds again. It's pretty cool.
Very nice. Wow, it looks
excellent.
It's really easy. I'm doing it right now. Sorry. Oh, they want me to sign up. I'll have to finish after. Oh, this is great. Oh, my gosh. Click icon to demo app. All right, here's mine. We knew this was coming because of Brian last week. Was it Brian? Richard? Why am I having a block?
Richard Burns,
yes.
That's where I get the Brian part. Richard! Oh, sorry, Richard. And he talked about... Google was going to offer storage space. And so today I went on Google Docs and there was a little blurb about how to upload to backup and you get a gig of space. So I have the link. I'm trying to get that right now of just how to do that. It's very easy. You don't even have to send a document or email or anything. You just upload it. And you can share that.
Rolling.
What's that?
It seems to be rolling. Like it, you know, I noticed my regular Gmail was on before my apps for Ed.
Yeah, so you may not have that capability yet, but it'll come. And it'll either convert it to something that the documents can handle or just leave it alone. You decide. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
And I put in the wrong, I put in the geek of the week. Here we go.
That's useful, too.
Yes, that is. But here comes the real.
The real geek of the week.
The geek of the week. I've lost all my windows here.
Not good.
Well, Bill, thank you again. And I hope this conversation continues. I mean, you know, books are written about this. You know, this is a big topic. You know, definitely.
Right.
Nobody has all the answers to it. And I love talking about it. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
You bet. Nice meeting you. And thanks for sharing those great Google links, because that's such a hard thing for people to wrap their brains around. But I think when they see more and more...
Well, I'm very sensitive to connectivity issues. I mean, you might have a computer in your room that's supposed to be on the internet all the time, but maybe the internet goes down. So if you have the video,
Right.
You don't need to be online. You just have the video. Or it might be something where you can have be walking around the room and you've got the remote and it's nothing for you to click next, click next, click next. Mm-hmm. But it's something completely different for you to go over and manipulate Google Earth and get it to go just where you want it to go. Or, and sometimes Google Earth doesn't cooperate. You're trying to get it to go one place and it spins a little differently than you want it to or something. And you fight with it for a few seconds. In the meantime, you're looking at the computer, not at your students.
Yes.
So that was my whole inspiration behind those videos.
Oh, good That's for you.
Well, and they're probably bigger than they need to be. If anyone knows something about video resolution, and because I bet they're probably 10 times bigger than they need to be. So I need to figure that out and probably reduce them. But I figured better to have too high a quality up there than too low a quality. So.
Mm. You're getting thanks from the chat room, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask the technology director at the school if all of a sudden the website takes a big hit or something.
Yeah, because, you know, we're huge. We have such a following.
Oh, bring down a website,
yeah? We are going to bring it down, yeah. All right, who's doing the outro?
I can do the outro.
All right.
Finish typing this. And I can't believe it, but it's an hour since we first started with our guests tonight talking about student and teacher and parent conferences, a conversation that's going to continue on. I want to say thanks to all the folks in the chat room. Great questions, comments. And thanks to Karen Abbott, who's now off celebrating her son's birthday with her family. And Bill, thanks for, I mean, we really owe you a great deal to start the conversation and to have us go live with it tonight. So thanks a lot for that.
Well, thank you for having me. I've listened to podcasts for years, and this first one I've ever been on.
Well, hopefully not your last.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. And I just have to give a big shout out to worldbridges.net, edtechtalk.com, because they provide the airways for us to come to you. So this is Cheryl Oakes over and out. Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. See you next week. Actually, not. But Ben and Ben will be here next week, and Matt Montang will be streaming for them, as Alice will be on her way to EDUCON, and I will be in Florida at the ATIA conference presenting. So, wow. Bob, you're going to have to hold down the fort and listen into the boys.
Yeah.
All right, thanks all. We're going to stop the broadcast. Good night.